I'll let you start it. So
I was just gonna say you can start it.
No, I always start it. It's always yeah.
You do not.
I'm in this too much. I listen to these things. It's like shut them up, Gary. Yeah. Okay. Good. I knew you wouldn't argue with me. One, two, three.
Welcome to Food Blog Radio.
Episode number.
Number.
50. Yay!
Wow, that's so amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah, who would have thought we would have got past 5?
Well, you would have.
I did. Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, but it was painfully. I'm going solo. So it's been so much easier and so much more fun with you.
Well, thanks. It has been a lot of fun. Yeah, I can't believe 50. That's a lot.
For us. Yeah.
For us.
Yeah, yeah. Thankfully, we are not that old yet.
No. I've still got a while to go.
Well, we are going down the block, right? This week?
Yes, we are. We're staying on the West Coast and headed down towards San Diego. We'll be speaking with Laura Bashar of Family Spice.
Oh, nice. I know Laura. We've been at many of events with Laura, and she's a long-established food blogger.
That's right. I mean, she does recipe development, graphic design, photographer. She's a cookbook author. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun things with her. She does fresh family recipes with a Persian. Okay, we'll start that again. She does fresh family recipes with a Persian flair. I'm so excited. I was going to say that to talk to her.
I had to come up with some kind of like cha-ching or da-ding every time you say that. So kind of like a little cash register ring.
I'm like halfway through when I say I'm so, and I go, oh darn it!
I gotta go. You're committed.
I know.
That's all right.
I need to like post adjectives on my screen or something. Say say this, not that.
Well, maybe our listeners can suggest some new adjectives for you. We can have a 50th episode adjective contest or something.
Yes,
and they'll get a photo of you and.
Being so excited.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, being so excited. I love it.
That's a little frightening.
Oh, well. Let's speaking
of... sort of digressed off of Laura's introduction.
Sorry, Laura. And with, starting episode 51, we will be calling us the Digression Podcast. All right, let's get Laura on the line.
Let's do, please. And we are back. Welcome into Food Blog Radio. Hello, Laura.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Gary.
We are so happy to have you here with us today. And we were talking earlier when we were doing our intro about we get to all stay on the West Coast today. How's the weather in San Diego where you are?
It is now beautiful because we had some sticky, icky weather, which San Diego is not used to rain, and we're not used to humidity. So actually had to turn the air conditioning on. We're so bad, but today is beautiful. It's a normal, beautiful day.
Sweet. Yeah. I'm going to be there next Friday, Laura.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to be there for the weekend. Then I'm going to go down to Tijuana for 2 days, one night on a media tour. So looking forward to it. I haven't really spent any time playing down that way.
Oh, there's a lot to do. Yeah. We're so used to the sun. That's... When it's gone, sometimes we're like, what do we do now? We can't go to the beach. What? You know, so, yeah.
Spoiled.
Spoiled. I know. Yeah. I admit it freely.
Well, that's great. Well, we have spent time with you before at our previously mentioned, very much beloved Camp Blogaway.
Yes.
We're still recovering from the sadness of knowing it will be no longer.
I know.
But... yeah. So in that time, I think the first time that I met you was probably the first time. Did you go to all of them, Laura?
I think I went to all but the first, but yes.
Okay. So we probably met the first time I was there, which I believe was the third year. I don't know. I don't remember. But it's always so much fun to talk to you when we're up there and we all get to hang out in jeans and comfy shirts and
no makeup. And
right. Gary never brings his makeup to camp. Can you believe it?
I never wear it to camp. It's so difficult to put my foundation on at camp.
It's like a rule he has. It's very strange.
No foundation at camp.
Tell us a little bit about your blog. We did mention it in our introduction. You are Family Spice.
I'm Family Spice, yeah. When I started over eight years ago, it was one of those things where I wasn't sure what I was doing, why I was doing it. A lot of friends were starting to do blogs. And actually, I think this was before even I knew what a blog was. I thought it was just a website. So I went to a class, one of these adult education classes. I learned HTML. And I thought that was the way you do it. You learn the coding. And I'm a little geeky and I enjoyed it a little too much. But I eventually learned, I can actually create a blog. And the blog, Blogger, it was originally Blogger. They do all the work for you. You don't need to know all that HTML stuff. And so I started that in 2008. And I had my little kids at home. I think they were just starting to all go to school. And I had a little bit of time and I decided to suck up all my free time with a blog. All about cooking, and I love to cook for my family. We're Persian, so there's a lot of Persian things involved. But I'm half Persian, so I have a very American twist to it. So I say I'm not necessarily an authentic Persian because I keep changing things. I don't follow the rules.
That's the best way to do it.
That's what I've been doing. I agree. Yeah. I'm always changing things. My husband tells me that's not how my mom made it. And I said, well, that's how I make it now. So.
Now, did you start out on the Blogger platform? Is that what you said?
I started out actually with an actual website.
Oh, okay.
And then I added a blog to it. And then, of course, now that's like an SEO no-no. But I had no idea what SEO was in 2008. But eventually everything was on Blogger. And then I moved to WordPress, 5 years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
4 years ago.
Right. And that's always, I imagine it was more difficult then than it is now. But the transferring of a blog from any platform is rather challenging and such. So did you do that on your own or did you have help?
Oh, no, I have help. Okay. Andrew Wilder helped me, another Camp Blogaway attendee, one other good friend I met through that. And my challenge was I had two platforms. I had FamilySpice.com, which was a website, a traditional white website that I created on my computer and uploaded it myself. And then I had FamilySpiceBlog.com because, again, I didn't know anything about SEO. And I had two different sites and he had to merge it into one as well as transfer everything to a third platform.
So Laura, Andrew's helped a lot of bloggers get through their trials and tribulations. He's certainly a big food blog advocate and he's been there for a lot of people and such. So when you first started out your blog, it was kind of as I understand it, an outlet for your free time because the little kiddies were at school. But what was your long-term goal with that, or was there one?
My original thought was to create a menu planning service. I had lofty goals. I thought I could take over the world, I think, because I knew HTML. And I thought, yeah, I can do all these things. And I worked, the typical first year of blogging, you put in, 80 hours a week into your blog, learning everything you can. And of course, back then, there wasn't even much to learn. So a lot of it was just trial and error. And I did that for several years. But I think I really didn't, I never foresaw the cell phone and apps and things like that. So when the apps came out, I thought, oh, okay, I could just change it. I could have an app idea. I could do this. I could do that. My other thing is I'm constantly coming up with ideas, and that's also my pitfall because I start so many projects. I overextend myself, but that's how I thrive. I just have to create things. I'm constantly creating new things.
That's great. I know you've done a lot of different things in the time that you've been blogging. I mean, you do recipe development. You do fantastic food photography.
Thank you.
Lots of things like that. And you are an author.
Yes. I self-published a book with my partner, Mary Plattis, California Greek girl. And even that whole project, we stumbled upon it together. She wanted to write, she was approached by an olive oil company and said, you need to write a book about olive oil because Mary's Greek. Olive oil runs in their veins. And, she's very passionate about olive oil. And I she didn't know how to go about doing it. We started talking, and next thing you know, we're writing a book together, and we had tremendous fun. We work very well together, and it's one of those things where you don't know what it's going to be like until you do it. And it was one of these things that we couldn't have planned out more beautifully. She's a wonderful partner to have, where my weaknesses were her strengths, her weaknesses were my strengths. And we put together cooking techniques and recipes with olive oil. And that's the name of the book. It's a really glamorous title. We decided not to, to forego those flowery titles because we wanted it to be a technique book so people can understand what's happening. What is it about olive oil? Because there's a lot of, even when we started this, what, 4 years ago, there wasn't that much news about olive oil. There was the book about extra virginity that talked about what was happening in Italy. It came in the news in the U.S. and then it left. And of course, here in the U.S., people didn't understand what was going on about olive oil. You had the 60 Minutes expose, which was what, a year ago, six to eight months ago. And yeah, it came out and people were like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And that's considered old news. Talk about globally about olive oil, what's happening with extra virgin olive oil. So when we started the book, we wanted it in the simple terms. We didn't want to overcomplicate what olive oil was about. And we wanted people to understand that, yeah, you can cook with it. You can do so many things with olive oil. And there's a lot of myths out there. And we wanted to teach people about it.
How long did it take you to write that cookbook?
The ebook, we came out with an ebook first, and we put that thing together in about 30 days. It was a 30 days where each day was 20 hours. It was a lot of work. I don't want people to think, wow, 30 days, that's it. It was a lot of intense, it was an intense 30 days. We came out with the ebook and we thought that was all we needed to do. And then we found out there's all these olive oil stores all over the US, started finding out about our book, and they're like, this is great, but when are you going to come out with a print version? And this wasn't the first time we heard that. We heard it over and over all through the summer. So we finished the book, what, May? Throughout the summer, we kept getting questions. When are you going to do a print book? So Mary and I talked about it, and we said, okay, let's do it. Let's dive in and print this thing. So when you're going from an ebook to a print book, it's, you know, you have to realize that the book has to be a certain, you know, minimal thickness of certain amount of information. So your ebook, we needed more information. So we added more content, more recipes, and that took an additional 3 to 4 months. I did the design. I learned the programs to design everything. And that saved on tremendous amount of design costs of hiring somebody to do that. But this is, I'm talking about 12 to 15 hour days, not, you know, when I say 3 months, my husband and my kids didn't see me. I was glued to the computer.
Wow, that's a long process. And it's a beautiful book, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, I'm curious, and we have talked to some cookbook authors, but I'm not sure any of them have put in that amount of time and effort into doing this. But what a day look like as far as a cookbook author goes?
Well, there's the actual writing part. So you have, Mary and I met, we designed the outline. What did we want? How did we want the chapter just to be set up? And that's pretty standard until, you know, but when you go into self-publishing, you also have to think about the whole marketing aspect before you write the book. So there was all that. We knew we were writing towards the olive oil store customer, people who bought higher end olive oil and wanted to learn more about it. So with that customer in mind, we made this book for them. And to this day, our number one customers are our olive oil stores. We love them. They love our book. And our book is used to help them sell more olive oil. So they're very excited about it. Now, when you're writing the book, my end, after all the recipes were developed, after I did all the photography, it was just constant editing. You know, photograph editing for me was the easy part. Then it was the designing of the book. You go to bookstores, we had to figure out what size of the book we wanted, paper quality, you know, hardback, paperback, all that stuff. I looked at Amazon. I was peeking through hundreds of books on Amazon to see how these different cookbooks were designed. How did they do the table of contents? How did they do their page numbers on the bottom of the page? How did they do all that, all of it, every aspect of it? So when you're designing the book, you're thinking about things that you never wouldn't think about as a traditional cookbook author. And I'd ask Mary, do you like this font or this font? And she's like, Laura, I don't care. Just make it beautiful. And I'm sweating over the fonts because I love my fonts. And then eventually we both, I mean, I made something. We talked about a farm to table feel of the book. And I think that's what we achieved.
Wow, so many details involved that people don't realize.
Oh, yeah.
With creating something like that. That's amazing.
And then you're talking to the printer and you have to remember it's a, each, if you want to add one more page, you can't just add one more page. You're adding four pages because when you're talking to a printer, it's really four pages you add at a time, not one page. So we told the printer, we had to guess about how many pages we had. Towards the end of the design process, we did a few, two page spreads of pictures to help, you know, because we were like, we were just so burnt out and so tired. And I said, oh, I can just make that into one giant picture and that could take up two pages and actually fit beautifully in there. It wasn't like we're just filling things up, but there's all those things that you have to think about. And for me, who had never designed a book, I felt personal pressure. Mary never put pressure on me. I put pressure on me because I'm a perfectionist and I just wanted it to turn out perfect. So it was a grueling process. I'll probably do it again. And, but I just not anytime soon right now. I'm kind of tired.
It's a beautiful book, and I've had the pleasure of looking at it, and I think you guys did a fabulous job. Certainly, I wish I could say I had the enthusiasm, and you guys may not have ended up with the enthusiasm, but to do a cookbook, and everybody that does one, it just impresses the heck out of me, and yours is just so detailed and so gorgeous. I'm so impressed.
Our biggest compliment is being told that it doesn't look like a self-published book. And I think the self-published industry has a stigma that's lifting. But even 4 years ago, there was a stigma about it. And when we say self-publish, even there's different degrees of self-publishing nowadays, because you can hire professionals to do your book and still self-publish versus doing it. You know, we did it all ourselves. We did hire an editor. But even still, there's different degrees on self-publishing. And yeah, we slaved over it.
Laura, you mentioned that you did all the photography for your book. When did you start getting interested in taking pictures?
I took pictures as a kid. I was in middle school. My dad always enjoyed photography. And this is back in the film days. And he did slides, and that's how you kept high res pictures, was we took slides. And when I got my little Pentax camera, and I had that little light meter. I had to do everything manually. I learned it all the traditional way. And then in high school, I thought I was going to be an ace photographer, like photojournalist. And I took pictures for the newspaper. I loved sports photography. I attended all of our high school games, and I worked for my local newspaper, which everybody thinks it sounds a lot more. I mean, they're just thankful for anybody to do any of the work for free. So I took pictures, I submitted it to my community newspaper, and they published it and gave me a byline. So I was very excited. But my main thing that turned me off from photojournalism, I should say, was my high school had a mentorship program where you could work with somebody in the career of your choice in the real world. And I worked for the Houston Chronicle one semester, and I rode around with real photographers for the Houston Chronicle. And I did go to a football game down at the Astrodome. I did go do news stories, and I met homeless people. And I think what made me realize that I didn't want to be a photojournalist was a bus accident, school bus accident, where a little boy was crossing the street in front of a bus and a driver did not stop. And I found out several days later that the boy did pass away. And I'm standing there with my mentor, and I said, I have to take pictures, and I see blood, and I see glass. And I said, I can't do this. I can't be a photojournalist. I can't do this. I enjoyed the experience tremendously, but to this day, I see a school bus, and I see cars going around it, and it takes me back to when I was 16 years old. Food is easier.
Yeah.
Food is just much easier.
I understand that. So, yeah, I certainly respect the career change there. There's no doubt about that. What kind of equipment do you use for food photography now?
I started with the Nikon. So right now I have a Nikon D7000. Use mostly for food photography. I use my 50 millimeter lens. I've been very happy with it. I know a lot of people use a 100 millimeter lens, which requires you to be further away from the food. And the way my house, and I mean, I have three kids, there's five of us, and yet we filled our house up pretty well. And I can't be that far away from my food. I don't have that space. So I'm very happy with my 50 millimeter lens.
I just started using the 50 millimeter in my videos, I switched to DSLR away from the, the little video cameras, vidcams, and finding the right lens to do video is completely different.
Yes.
And then finding lenses to do food photography. And I used the 100 millimeter for my photography, but I did have a 50 millimeter 1.8 sitting around, and I just shot a video yesterday, and I really liked the way it turned out. It wasn't terribly wide, right. and it had some really great detail. So I think it's a lens that I used to use for my food photography a few years back because of the depth of field that I was trying to achieve and such. So yeah, cool. Nice to hear somebody else is doing the same thing.
Yeah, and I'm dabbling with video. I don't do it consistently enough. Again, it's a time. I mean, it's a time constraint. Mm-hmm. So, and I've been shooting video with my 50 millimeter too, mostly because I have it and I don't want to invest in another lens, but I do have I have to look it up. I have a Tamron lens that I use a lot too, because sometimes 50 millimeters, it's just too close sometimes and you need to zoom out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Again, space is an issue for me. So yeah, the video I find very challenging.
What do you do for audio with your videos?
I'm not in the video. I do not like being in the video. That's why I asked Sarah, am I going to be on video on this interview? So I know with YouTube, that's like a big no-no. So I'm still overcoming that little personal issue I have. So my videos are just music in the background.
Okay. Well, the talking hands videos, where you're not in the video, are still hugely popular. And in fact, I watch a lot of woodworking videos, and you'd be surprised how many people don't even talk on those, and they just play some background music while you get to watch them, build something. And, they're rarely, in fact, there's quite a few that aren't even in the video themselves. It's just their woodworking hands, and that's so much more acceptable now. And quite frankly, I think it's fairly popular, so.
Is that what you do, Laura? Do you do the talking hands, or are you actually in your videos?
My hands are in the videos. My voice is not. I don't have the, that's my next research, I guess, is if I do my voice, I have to get the microphone and I have to get, because I don't like that echo sound. I think it's the user experience. It always goes back to what do I enjoy watching and what do I want to see? I don't want to see a messy kitchen right now. My kitchen's always messy, so I have to make sure that clean kitchen and nicer audio.
No, I was just going to say that audio is king on video. It really makes a difference. And I will have to tell you that if you may want to consider just doing voiceovers on your videos, may be a solution that you're looking for. So you're in it, people can hear you, but you don't necessarily have to be all in it.
All in it, yeah. Yeah, that's my next project. See, I told you, I'm always like, I like learning and conquering things, and I just move on to the next one. So video is my next challenge.
Yeah. Have you tried any of the Facebook Live videos?
No.
Like that long pause in there.
I really don't understand the point of Facebook Live videos. I know it's like this whole idea. It's like a mini show. I guess you can talk to people and answer questions. But if nobody's there when you're doing it, I personally don't like going through my feed and I see there's immediately a live video of people just grocery shopping or, so I'm just trying to figure out what is the point of the Facebook Live video? Where's the success in it? And then I'll decide if I'm ready for that or not.
I think there has to be a certain following milestone that you achieve. It's pointless if you have a couple thousand fans on Facebook, whereas if you had a couple hundred thousand or more, there's more value to it. We see these huge YouTube stars doing this stuff, and they're very successful at it, but they have 2 or 3 million followers, of course they're going to be, there's always somebody on with those kind of numbers.
Exactly.
So for us little people, yeah, I think it's kind of useless.
Yes. Well, but I think it's because, I think people are doing it because Facebook is giving more weight to the video in general. And so the more that they see you either posting video or doing live, which of course is their new thing, so they're going to weight that more heavily. They're actually showing it to more people. Whereas, you know, I can just throw up some little written post and it says, you know, like, oh, shown to 42 people. Versus, versus like a 2 second, three second video of, you know, I don't know, something that I just, you know, cooking something on the stove that doesn't even have me in it, but like a bubbling pot of something. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, shown to 400 and, you know, plus people. Is like, really? So I think that's the reasoning behind people are just trying to get more exposure out there, having Facebook share themselves or whatever it is that they're doing more.
Laura, yeah, you've been blogging since 2008. Now, let's put your crystal ball in front of you. And what do you think is going to be, if you have a thought, on the next evolution of blogging and maybe what you think it's going to look like as far as food blogging 8 years from now?
Well, we saw, I mean, I'm not the only one who's been blogging that long. I've seen a lot of people jump in with even the last couple of years and skyrocket to, quote, blogging fame. And for those of us that have been in the trenches for so long, you know, it can be a little frustrating. I think it's there is a game involved. There is the social media game. There is the SEO game, the magic formula that some people have all the time to sit and research it and do it right the first time and hit the ground running. It's there. And I think a lot of people jumped into blogging because they heard their friends were making money blogging. They got free product. They got exposure, all that stuff. But, you know, and then you've seen people burn out. I just, you know, saw a good friend of mine that has been blogging a long time saying she's hanging up her, you know, blogging shoes and kind of done. It's not fun anymore. So I've seen all of that. And for me, the not fun anymore, I've been through that many times. And that's why I said I have to come up with something new to create. If I was just blogging, I don't think I could have stuck with it. That's why I created a cookbook. That's why I took on photography. I said, I love photography. I can do this. And I spent a whole year working on my photography. I love, my background is kind of graphic design and advertising. I play around with graphic design. I come up with different projects. I'm constantly creating because it has to be for me beyond the blog. I need another extension. What I also see with a lot of people is they're using their blog as a resume. So you've got the big bloggers who are making big bucks and they have a huge career out of it. And that's wonderful for them. But most of us can't do that and haven't been able to do that. And it's not necessarily possible for us to do it. So for me, it's also a resume. I like working with brands quietly in the background. I like working, you know, I just did a project where I was helping one company who has a new kitchen appliance and they needed a recipe book to go with it and they needed recipes for it. I like those projects that have nothing to do with the blog. I don't have to post it. There's no Facebook. There's no Instagram. I don't have to worry about that. They're hiring me for a job that I enjoy and then I work on it and then I move on. So I think they're different. The food world has evolved. We've heard Patty at Camp Blog Away talk about, you know, just even in her career, what the food industry has evolved into. And I think that's one thing, that's the beauty of the digital world is there's something new that comes in. And like you say, video is big. So next thing you know, you're seeing a bunch of people are going into video. Well, video is not going away. We know that. My kids are growing up with their YouTube stars. They have their YouTube shows that they like to watch. And I think it's hilarious. I said, they're following their YouTube stars on Instagram. They're following their YouTube stars, you know, on Snapchat, whatever it is. So I think it's, you know, there's a new innovation we won't know about. There's a new social media we won't know about. And then it comes out and we all have to jump aboard. The question is, do we still want to do it or not? And I think that's what many of us struggle with. You guys created a wonderful podcast. And I think that's what we have to do is we have to figure out, is it just the blog? Is there something else we can do? Are we going to do cooking classes out of this? Are we going to create a culinary center? Are we going to create a cookbook, self-published, traditional? You know, there's so many options right now that you can totally steer it whatever direction you want. And even with the video bloggers, the vloggers out there, some of them are doing better as a YouTube video star than thinking of ever going to the Food Channel. You know, why would I go to Food Channel? I'm doing great on my own and I have total control. So I am enjoying the ride. Whenever I get burnt out with the blog, I've learned finally it's okay to walk away from the blog and work on something else. It's my own personal guilt that I put on myself, but I did that a few years ago, so I've gotten over the guilt. But still, I always go back to it, and if people are there still reading, great. If not, you know, Google will hit me with something else in another year, and there's another ding waiting for me, and I have to work on it. But there's the beauty of the blogging is that it's whatever you want it to be, and for a control freak like me, it's exactly what I want it to be.
So, Laura, you touched on two very, very key thoughts for the future, and I like that you said that you wrote a cookbook for a specific product, and I think that is a monstrously huge avenue for food bloggers to take a look at, because there are so many appliances, there are so many foods, there are so many outlets that don't have that, and to approach them and say, hey, you know what, let's work together and I'll put together 20 recipes for a little pamphlet for you or something like that. You know, what's that worth to you? I think that's just absolutely huge and brilliant. And the other thing that you mentioned were the cooking classes. And I think there's a huge future for online cooking classes, especially with everybody getting used to live video.
Yeah.
And you're seeing more of that happening right now via Facebook and such. I know Jerry James Stone does it. Jock from The Vegetarian Baker does it. And there's a lot of people out there that are embracing that. And some of that is vendor sponsored. So there's certainly some financial opportunity there. So two brilliant points I wanted to.
I'm brilliant. Thank you.
Well, you are brilliant. And
yes,
thanks.
Yes, you are.
Thanks for bringing those up and sharing those thoughts. Cause I think everybody should be running away right now after they listen to the podcast and start plotting their next 5 years through these two things alone could be very, very big.
Well, even strategically, I forget, you know, I get stuck in my own bubble, in my own little tunnel. You know, I've got my family life and I have my kids and I get wrapped up in that and I forget, you know, I see what other people are doing and it's very easy to get wrapped up in it. I am totally guilty of that. I'm like, oh, look what they're doing. That's so awesome. I wish I could do that. And it's, you sometimes things fall on your lap and sometimes you have to pursue it. And what I've learned is, I mean, my husband and I talked about it. When an opportunity shows up, if you can't say, well, I don't have, it's not convenient for me right now. Or I could do it in a month, maybe next week, or, you know, sometimes an opportunity comes to you and you just have to take it and just power through and it could lead to something. And that's something that I have discovered with even just the cookbook, like the olive oil cookbook. It was one of those things that was like, well, gosh, that's kind of, it was out of my comfort zone, but I learned a lot. I became an olive oil taste tester and I can conduct tastings and I teach people all the time. It was one of those opportunities that I never would have thought of pursuing, but that came to me and I took it and it led to so many other different paths.
Laura, thank you so much for sharing all of your time with us. And we are just about getting to the end of our podcast. Why don't you share with everyone where they can find you on social media?
Very easy. I'm Family Spice on pretty much all of it. Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. What else? Pinterest. Pinterest is my favorite, and Instagram, because I'm, again, the visual person, and I'm Family Spice under all that.
Well, that is simple.
That is simple.
It is. That's awesome, Laura. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We had a great time, and sad to say goodbye, but I am certainly looking forward to your next endeavor, because it sounds like you have several in the works, so keep us posted on what goes on.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. enjoyed our time with Laura. We had a great conversation, and she really brought some light to all the different details that go into self-publishing a cookbook. I was fascinated.
Yeah, I certainly have been talked out of ever wanting to do any cookbook publishing because it sounds like real work to me. And I just don't have any time for real work.
Well, it is a lot of work, but you know what? Her cookbook is really beautiful.
It is.
We will make sure that everyone knows where to find it in the notes, the show notes.
Yep, absolutely. So she had some good advice, and I think the future of food blogging, there was some solid tips in there for that too. So I hope everybody got as much out of this as we did. And until next time.
Yeah, I agree. Look for us on Facebook at foodblogradio.com. We're on Twitter at foodblogradio.com. And of course, our website, foodblogradio.com. Well, I guess we're not foodblogradio.com on Twitter and Facebook, are we? We're just at foodblogradio.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, y'all, it's pretty much the same.
We forgive you.
Thanks.
Not really?
Look for us. Definitely drop us a line. Leave us a comment. You know, share your favorite podcast with your friends. We would love that, as always.
All right. Take care, everybody. Be good to your heart.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.